John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute, looking at the New World Report from the point of view of Bogota. This is a specific headline that came up in these last hours. Colombia's Ecopetrol criticizes new attacks on oil pipeline. Colombia's majority state-owned oil company, Ecopetrol, criticized new attacks against an oil pipeline run by its subsidiary, Senet, saying the attacks harm the country's population and the economy. I connect this item of import to the Colombia fossil fuel sector with complaints or observations by the new president, Gustavo Petro, that he is frustrated and angry and is going to take action against armed gangs. Now, in particular, one armed gang that I can't be certain connects to the previous armed gangs, one of which Mr. Petro belonged to in his youth, well, sort of youth, and the other being FARC that was said to have made peace, and another named ELN. I get lost in the acronyms. Professor, the Petro complaint, who is it against, and how does it connect to this attack on the oil fields? How does it connect to his legacy as a man who wanted to negotiate with the gangs?
It's a great question, John. So the specific answer regarding the Cano-Limon-Covinas pipeline, essentially in part of the oil-producing part of Colombia in the relatively remote eastern portion of the country, you've long, because of its remoteness and because of the value of those pipelines, two things happening. You've long had groups, especially the guerrillas back in the day, and especially the FARC and the ELN, trying to blow up the pipeline or sabotage the pipeline as acts against the government. However, just in the same way in Mexico, you've got what they call the huachicoleros, basically people trying to siphon off various different petroleum fuels from that sector in order to use it for the production or refinement of coca into cocaine. And so ironically, things are a lot better in terms of the pipeline than they used to be. There was a time when you would talk about literally 100 to 200 attacks per year back in the late 1990s, I remember. So the fact that they're talking about five attacks in the past year is not quite that bad. But the broader picture that you alluded to, John, is especially in that remote area of the east of the country, the border region with Venezuela, you have a series of different groups. And so you have, on the one hand, when the FARC, at least theoretically, demobilized in 2016 or after 2016, pursuant to the peace accords negotiated by the Santos regime, you had some of the groups that were most deeply involved in cocaine trafficking and other illicit activities, what they call the FARC dissidents, then under a person by the name of Gentil Duarte, that basically stayed and continued to do criminal activity, controlling the border region and taking advantage also of the ability to operate safely and hide their goods and guns and money and have properties on the Venezuelan side. In addition, you had the other group, the ELN, which actually also used to be involved in the kidnapping of oil workers and other things in that remote region, who actually expanded in power, especially in the border region, because of the FARC dissolving away. And of course, the ELN came to operate extensively on the Venezuelan side in mining and in various other things. And then in addition to that, you had other criminal groups. The biggest of them were what they call the Gulf Clan, also known as the Urbeños, also known as the Autodefensas Gaitanistas de Colombia, or the AGC, who were doing criminal operations. Their origins were actually originally as militias hired to protect against the FARC, but they themselves got involved in drugs and other illicit activities. So as you point out, John, you have just this soup of different armed groups, especially in that remote border region between Colombia and Venezuela, that's actually just been reopened to expanded trade and traffic thanks to the rapprochement between Petro in Colombia and Maduro in Venezuela. But in the midst of all of that mess, what you basically now have is Petro came in and said, okay, let's have peace with everyone. And so his ideological left friends, he used to be part of a previously disbanded group called the M19, he said, okay, let's have negotiations with the ELN. And they kind of got that going with some fits and starts. But then he said, let's do a ceasefire against all of the major groups who say that they're willing to do a ceasefire. And so basically the narcos said, Sure. If you stop going after us, we'll stop going after you, which it was never negotiated in sufficient detail. And that was part of the problem. The Gulf Clan were never really attacking the state, but the fact was that Petro allowed them, you know, basically, that ceasefire announced around Christmas allowed them to continue to do their criminal activity. And so finally, Petro got frustrated with the sense that because their criminal activity was going on, he said, we misunderstood what we meant by ceasefire. So we're going to start going after you again, because we can't just leave you alone to continue to do your criminal activity and extortion. And so really, the two things is one, an illustration of how oftentimes some of the policies that Petro announces sound good, but have had problems because they have not been fully thought through. And number two, just really illustrating the complexity of those interacting criminal groups in the region now.
Professor Avenelis, U.S. Army War College. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,